I'd just like to welcome everybody to the Chronic Liver Disease Foundation GAP PBC podcast series. And joining me today is Dr. Sunil Kumar. She is an assistant professor at Weill Cornell and also the director of clinical hepatology at Weill Cornell as well. I'm Dr. Kimberly Brown. I'm at Henry Ford Hospital, professor of medicine at Wayne State University and Michigan State University as well. So welcome, Sunil. Nice to see you.
Thank you. Good to see you.
So the topic tonight, you know, we've had this whole podcast series going. Topic tonight is really the need for earlier intervention of ursodiol and looking at the response and sort of when I think we should start to consider second line therapy. So, you know, in your practice, I know that we've changed over time. You know, we've looked at alkaline phosphatase as an indicator of response. What are the markers that you're currently using, and sort of what are the, I guess, the levels of the markers? You know, we've kind of learned in the past certain things, and I think our practice is really changing. So what do you do now in your practice?
Yeah, I mean, my practice has definitely evolved. I've, you know, been at Cornell now for 12 years, and the way I practice now is very different than when I started. I think, you know, when I started out, I used to use alkaline phosphatase with a target of 1.67 times the upper limit of normal to classify a patient as being a responder to first-line therapy. But as we gathered more and more data and seen more and more studies, we have learned that maybe that's not enough of a target. And now I strive for normalization of alkaline phosphatase at the 12-month mark. Having said that, you know, there is even newer data to suggest that maybe we should be looking a little bit earlier than the 12-month mark to assess patients for response to first-line therapy with UDCA. And so I've at least started having the discussion with my patients around the 6-month mark, because I think that's, you know, the majority of the initial response happens within the first 6 months. And you kind of have an idea of who's going to need second line therapy by that point.
Are you, I think that's what I'm doing as well. I think certainly by 6 months. In fact, you know, I think some of my colleagues think even at 3 months, you know, you can start to see if somebody doesn't respond at all, then, you know, maybe you just move on. But how are you looking at like AST, ALT, bilirubin? Do you use those at all, maybe in conjunction with ALPFOS or independently?
Yes, I think for bilirubin, definitely. You know, I've adopted the goal of a bilirubin about 0.6 times the upper limit of normal should be our treatment goal for our patients with PBC. And I use that in conjunction with alkaline phosphatase. I would say ALPFOS is still my primary marker that I, you know, look at on a day-to-day basis or month-to-month or whenever I see the patients. But I do keep in mind or pay attention to what the trend of bilirubin is, because even if the bilirubin is within the normal range, but you see it slowly creeping up, 0.3, 0.4, 0.5, you know, that worries me if it starts to creep up, that maybe the patient has more advanced disease or is progressing despite therapy. So I definitely look at bilirubin. AST and ALT, traditionally, we think of PBC to be a cholestatic process with more alkaline phosphatase bilirubin elevation. But I think, you know, I do see an effect on AST and ALT when you have disease control. I do see patients' AST and ALT improve. Sure. You know, if they're not responding to first-line therapy, it also would raise this suspicion, is there anything like an overlap syndrome going on? Do we need to investigate for further etiologies of what may be underlying even something like mast cells? But I do pay attention to that as well.
Yeah. And then, you know, now that we have therapies, right, second line therapies for PBC, How do you start that discussion with patients? Are there certain patients that, you know, you're kind of moving to second line earlier, you're more worried about, or is it pretty much the same, you know, for everybody?
Yeah, I don't think it's the same for everybody. I try to really risk assess patients individually. Patients with more fibrosis at baseline, I'm more worried about and probably more aggressive in having that discussion, looking at the numbers at the 3 or 6 month standpoint or time point so that we can talk about or even start second line therapy sooner. Because I want to get their numbers under control before they progress. I don't want this wait to fail kind of mentality. It's much more, I think, now shifting towards a much more individualized risk assessing the patient at every time point approach, as opposed to the same thing, only assessing them at 12 months for everybody. I've shifted away from that.
Do you, are there groups of patients, you know, whether they be African-American or men, or as you pointed out, patients with more advanced disease when you initially see them, that, you know, you tend to be a little bit more aggressive, like maybe, you know, working, not that we don't work hard to get all of our patients into a normal range, but I mean, just are there patients that you consider higher risk in terms of progressive disease?
Yeah, yes, definitely the patients, like you said, the ones that have more advanced fibrosis at baseline. But then I think also men, I think they have a different disease course. And now whether that be they get diagnosed later at later stages or they have sort of a different path, I tend to be more aggressive. I don't have a ton of men, but I tend to be more aggressive in trying to get their numbers in the normal range when I do see them.
Yeah. What do you think about the data, you know, essentially you talked about the 1.67 times the upper limit of normal, and that was kind of what was all in the clinical trials and what we shot for. But what do you think about the data that kind of suggests that the more normal you are with respect to ALK loss, but also the how long you've been closer to normal? What do you think about that? And does that influence, you know, how quickly you think about a second line therapy, or does that influence what you do?
Absolutely. I pay attention to the degree of elevation and the length of time out of that normal range. And those are the discussions I'm having with patients as well. You know, the longer you have damage to the liver and the more damage you have to the liver, the more at risk you are for disease progression. So I try to act relatively quickly. Again, more at the, you know, by 6 months, if I think you're going to need second line therapy, we're already having that discussion and potentially starting treatment that early on.
Yeah. So we, you know, I'm not sure there's really great guidance here, but I'm, you know, just interested in your opinion. So, you know, you have somebody on, you know, second line therapy. How long are you going to wait, you know, for them? How are we going to gauge that response? And now that we have, you know, different options, I mean, would you consider, I guess, how long would you wait? What would the response be that you're looking for? And would you consider switching maybe to an alternate second line therapy?
Yeah, you know, it's nice that we have options, but we have to sort of figure out how we are going to utilize those options in our practice. So time will tell. But I think one of the nice things about all of the second line therapies is that you see the response pretty quickly. So if you look at the data, the drop in alkaline phosphatase for the most part is within the first 4 weeks or so. And so I think you have some sort of indicator that the patient may be responding within the first 4 weeks. Now, I'm not going to necessarily stop therapy after 4 weeks if I don't reach goal. But I think you have an idea of where, you know, if the patient is going to respond or not. But the same thing, you know, we don't want our patients being out of range for too long. So I think I would just probably, I don't know yet, because these are all you know, coming up now, these new therapies, but about switching, but potentially the same thing that I would do with, you know, first line therapy, UDCA, like by 3 or 6 months, sort of you'll know whether they're going to respond for sure by that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, anything else that you want to add about, you know, again, this is just, I think, for our listeners, kind of a change in our practice about how, you know, what we're looking for is in terms of response and how quickly we're looking for that response. But anything else that you want to add?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just important to for all of our listeners to know that each individual patient is a little bit different, and we have to really individualize our management. I think overall, our goal should be normalization, and we should try to get there as soon as possible. But everybody's a little bit different, and I think it's really important that we, you know, shift to a very patient-centered practice in how we manage our patients and start therapy on them.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I just want to thank you for joining me today, and thank everybody for listening to this podcast. Hopefully, you'll be listening to this one and many more to come. So thanks very much. Good to see you.
You too. Thanks for having me.